Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
And a very good morning to you. It's Thursday, the 25th of August. Welcome to this edition of Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, dismay in Zambia over the closure by the authorities of three commercial broadcasters.
I think they were doing their job. I don't know why they really closed Combo and Radio or Movie TV.
It has really affected me because, like, now I'll have no entertainment. It has been my entertainment. Every time I want to refresh my mind, I'm tired from books.
South Sudan's government sets conditions for the return home of former rebel leader Riek Machar.
If Riek Machar wants to come back to South Sudan, then he should denounce violence so that we don't go back to war.
Stay tuned to this edition of Africa Link.
Top story.
Media activists in Zambia are condemning the suspension of the licenses of three private broadcasters by the authorities earlier this week. The closures come as the country is in disarray over allegations of vote rigging at elections 2 weeks ago. The three stations that have been forced to shut down are Movie TV, which is a DW partner station and the nation's largest commercial television outlet, Komboni Radio and Radio Iteje Teje. Observers say the closures will have a chilling impact on the flow of information in the country and on Zambian journalism generally. From Lusaka, Kathy Sikombe reports.
Since the suspension of licenses of the three media organizations, Movie TV, Komboni and Iteje Teje, all that one can see at the affected stations is the armed police that stands guard and has cordoned off the premises of the three stations. Staff members have not also been allowed near them. Elizabeth Mwene Chanda, vice chairperson for the Media Institute of Southern Africa, MISA, says it is worrying that there seems to be a trend in which private media houses, presumed to be carrying dissenting views, have been targeted and persecuted using various laws and processes.
As MISA, of course, we were very disappointed and very shocked when we heard about that particular suspension, and especially because it involved three media houses at the same time. And of course, as MISA, what we did is that we endeavored to meet the IBA just to find out what exactly it was, because they were pointing out to issues of national security. They were not able to tell us what exactly these issues were. The IBA needed to engage the involved parties before they suspended those licenses and give those people an opportunity to be heard.
I also spoke to some Lusaka residents about the suspension of operating licenses.
I think they were doing their job. I don't know why they really closed Combo and Radio or Movie TV. Looking at the Zambian media nowadays, you find that you can, from their adverts, you're able to tell which party or political party they're affiliated to. So I don't know how freedom comes in, because it's not really free. I think there's some kind of influence.
Actually, I'm a fan of Combo Radio. I usually listen to it. It's unfortunate that actually it has been closed. It's really unfortunate. It has really affected me because, like, now I'll have no entertainment. It has been my entertainment. Every time I want to refresh my mind, I'm tired from books.
Where we have a legal environment that is very unfriendly for media practitioners in this country. You have so many laws that seem to take away from the freedom of expression. You know, you have things that have to do with state security. You have things like defamation of the president.
Activists say the timing of the suspension, after a contested presidential election claiming that they pose a threat to national security, raises suspicions as it leaves the authorities' conduct open to speculation given the current political events. The three affected media organizations will now have to wait until 14th September to have their case heard by the Independent Broadcasting Authority.
Kathy Sikombe for analysis of the suspension of the licenses of the three stations. Eunice Wanjiru spoke to McDonald Chipenzi, executive director of the Zambia Foundation for Democratic Process. She began by asking him to assess the current state of media freedom in the country.
We are sliding into a very dangerous cliff. where media freedom and freedom of speech is concerned. The government is on a systematic approach to silencing any media house that is giving space for people with divergent views, and also for those who are perceived to be giving space for the opposition. And I think from the time Zambia was declared independent, this is one of the sad moments of Zambia's history. Not even in the one-party state did we have such kind of approach to media freedom.
So what signal is the government trying to send with this kind of closure?
Well, first, the closure itself is illegal. The IBA, that is the Independent Broadcasting Authority, is also illegally, performing its duties. If it were issues of unprofessional misconduct of these private and commercial radio stations, then the Electoral Commission of Zambia should have presented a complaint to the IBA. And when the IBA is asked to give us where who complained against or about the unprofessional conduct, they are unable to give such kind of an explanation. So truly speaking, it's not unprofessional misconduct or unprofessional conduct. It is purely a political move. So for me and for many others, our view is that this is beyond unprofessional misconduct. This is purely a political issue at hand.
So what can you tell us about the particular stations that were shut down?
Purely, Movie TV has been providing opposition political parties, especially the UPND, which is the largest opposition political party, a lot of space to air their programs, their policies to the public. So was Kombon Radio. So was Itesh Radio in the Southern Province, which is now part of Central Province.
Has your organization ever received any cases of harassment from media practitioners?
A lot of them, actually. This media harassment, intimidation started a long time ago. From 2011, mostly media houses, media practitioners were being harassed by state machinery. Except that the media itself has not been very, very strong in defending itself from state attack.
McDonald Chipenze.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
The government of South Sudan has set conditions for the return home of former rebel leader and vice president Riek Machar. It insists that Machar denounce violence and quit politics. Machar disappeared from South Sudan nearly 2 months ago and is now receiving medical treatment in Khartoum, according to the Sudanese Information Minister Ahmed Osman Bilal. James Shimanyula has been following the story from Nairobi.
Nearly 2 months after former Vice President Riek Machar disappeared from the public and absconded his official duties, the government in Juba has said that Machar is free to return to his country as long as he abstains from engaging in any political activities until election time. South Sudan's information minister, Michael Makwei, said that if Machar wishes to be the next president of South Sudan, it should be done peacefully and not by the use of force.
Riek Machar wants to come back to South Sudan, then he should denounce violence so that we don't go back to war, because it is his coming here which created violence. As a government, we have no problem with him coming here, but come to South Sudan on these conditions. He should abstain from politics until that time when election comes, because what he wanted is to be the president. To become a president is not taken by force. It is through the ballot, not the bullet.
Peter Nyaba, one of Riek Machar's close advisers, has described the conditions set out on Machar by the Juba government as unrealistic.
We will not accept this. Dr. Machar is a very important factor in the peace process. You cannot implement the peace process without him. In fact, what Taban, Makwei, and those of Salfakir did was really to destroy the peace agreement itself. Salfakir has been clear from day one that this agreement would not be implemented because he does not want to share power. He wants to maintain this totalitarian regime.
The latest political and military developments in South Sudan have prompted former United States Special Envoy in Juba, Princeton Layman, to propose that the country should be put under the international administration pending stabilization.
What is needed is an international administrator over the country and security forces and an arms embargo and a number of other steps to bring the situation under control. There's no real pressure from the surrounding countries.
That report was compiled by James Shimanyula. The people of Gabon go to the polls on Saturday at a time when social tension in the country is rising because of the slump in oil prices. Gabon is one of Africa's largest oil producers and among the continent's wealthier nations. The vote sees one of the strongest challenges yet to 50 years of rule by the Bongo family, with incumbent Ali Bongo, who stepped into his father's shoes on his death in 2009, facing opposition from one of Africa's foremost diplomats, ex-African Union Commission Chief Jean Ping. This report by Martina Shvikovsky is read now by Isaac Mugabe.
Election placards along the highways of Libreville, capital of Gabon, praise President Ali Bongo and his Gabonese Democratic Party for building kilometers of tarred roads, creating new jobs and attracting foreign investment. In his campaign, Bongo is seeking to convince voters that his plans for modernization and development can turn Gabon into an emerging economy. His critics accuse him of spreading chaos and wanting to install a dictatorship. Bongo's rival for the presidency is Jean Ping, a former chairman of the African Union Commission and leader of the Gabonese Progress Party. The popular 74-year-old is promising reforms and is critical of the current condition of the Gabonese judiciary.
Nous avons un pays où la justice est aux ordres.
One of the most important measures that we must carry out is to restore the independence and the credibility of the justice system.
Restaurer l'indépendance et la crédibilité de la justice.
Gabon has a population of 1.7 million, and because of its oil wealth, it has one of the highest per capita incomes in Africa. But the revenue from oil, wood, and mineral exports lands mostly in the pockets of a small political elite. For many years, Gabon relied on oil as the chief source of national revenue. But as President Bongo told DW, the government has been seeking to diversify the economy since oil prices went into decline.
We have increased, you know, production in many areas, reduced the level, the importance of oil in our GDP from 46% to almost 23%. And at the same time, we have been able to boost, you know, other industries, forestry, mining, and then giving us much more resources.
Whatever the level of resources, the opposition says the government has a record of breaking its election promises. The opposition is also casting doubt on Bongo's origins, claiming that he was an adopted child, not a natural-born citizen of Gabon. And if that were true, this means he would not be eligible to stand for the presidency. But the Constitutional Court, which is headed by Bongo's mother-in-law, ruled at the end of July that his candidacy was valid. As well as Bongo and Ping, nine other candidates are vying for the presidency. The winner is the candidate who garners the most votes in a single round of voting. This could make it relatively easy for Bongo to retain his hold on power.
That report was written by Martina Shvikovsky. Coming up now, radio drama from the Learning by Ear team.
Deutsche Welle, Learning by Ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello there, and welcome once again to Learning by Ear. This is the 11th episode of our ongoing radio drama, The Promised Land, a story of African migration to Europe. In the past 10 episodes, we've been following the lives of three young people, Farahani, Chivasi, and Linda, as they struggled with the issue of migration to Europe. In the previous episode, Linda surprised her parents and friends by arriving home unannounced and treated her friends to an all-night party. Meanwhile, Farahani finally managed to sneak himself onto a boat with other migrants, but when they got within sight of the shore, the man that paid to smuggle them in told them all they had to swim the last few kilometers. Many people drowned in the stormy sea, but Farahani was lucky. He was rescued at the last minute by guards with the European Border Agency, Frontex. So has he finally made it? What will happen to him now? And how is Chivasi taking Linda's return to Europe? Keep listening to today's episode to find out. It's called Detention Center, which is where Farahani and the other illegal migrants who survived the crossing have been taken.
You there. You go inside. And you, yes, you. This is where you'll be kept for now. When we've processed you, you'll be given a document allowing you to stay here for 30 days. After that, you'll most likely be deported back to your home country.
What? No. No, this must be a mistake. This place looks like a prison. Yes. I mean, it's cold. We are surrounded by a barbed wire fence. And how are four of us supposed to fit in this one little room?
Did you think you'd be taken to a five-star hotel? Listen, you all came here illegally. You should be glad that you have a roof over your heads at all. Until we identify your nationalities, this will be your home. Get used to it.
I want asylum. That's all. I'm from a war zone in the Middle East. How long will it take for me to be granted asylum?
Who knows? 1 month? Two? Huh? Three? A year? Or even 10 years? You wanted to come to Europe? Well, this is Europe. Breakfast is served at 7 in the morning, lunch at 1 p.m. and dinner at 6:30 in the evening. What? If you're late, you'll miss it. Do not try to escape from this center. We are watching your every move on camera. Any other questions? Good. Close that door.
This can't be right. It can't be. This is not what I imagined at all.
Farahani can't believe what he's seeing and hearing. What will he decide to do? Will he be able to persuade the authorities with his application for asylum? We'll soon find out. Meanwhile, Linda has left her country of origin to go back to her life in Europe. Her short visit and her apparent success over there have made all her friends desperate to go to Europe so that they can have a life like hers. But what kind of life is it, really? Let's follow Linda as she meets her friend Florence and Charles, the stranger she married to get a work permit, at Charles's house.
That's it, Florence. I can't do this anymore. That's it.
Charles, we've been through this many times. You don't have to worry. Everything will be fine.
No, it won't. Not this time. You weren't here when they came. I'm so stupid.
I'm sorry. I just got back from my homeland and I'm a bit confused. What's going on here? What's the problem?
You are the problem. You shouldn't have left.
Excuse me? I thought our marriage was I thought I was free to do as I wished. Wasn't that the agreement, Flo?
Yes, yes. But Linda, Charles is only worried because while you were away, the immigration officials came round and announced. They wanted to know why you'd gone back to your country without taking your husband along.
Oh no, oh my goodness. What happened? What did they want? Have they found out?
They suspect us. They told me that they'd caught several couples who had faked a marriage to help a foreigner stay and work in Europe. They want us to go for an interview.
Another one? Florence, what do I do? I can't afford to be sent back home. I really can't.
Hey, relax, both of you. This is what they always do. They want you to panic so that you'll make mistakes during the interview. Just act cool and confident. Linda, you'll have to lie to them and say that there was a family emergency back home.
Excuse me, I have to take this in private.
No, Linda, no. We're talking about a serious issue. You will take the call right here and make it quick.
Hello, Mom? I arrived safely. I already sent you a text. Didn't you get it?
Oh, Linda, it's...
Mom, what's going on? Are you all right?
It's your father. He was hit by a car.
What? No, that can't be. How is he, Mom? Is he okay? Please tell me he's okay.
He's in intensive care. The doctors have said it's too early to say whether or not he'll make it. Linda? Hello? Are you still there?
The lie that Linda was supposed to tell the immigration people that she'd gone home without Charles because of a family emergency has just come true. When she heard that her father was seriously ill in hospital, Linda was so shocked that she passed out. Charles and Florence were just in time to catch her and lay her on the couch. What will happen now? Meanwhile, Chivasi is desperately missing Linda. his application for a European tourist visa has been denied because he doesn't have enough money in the bank. So he decides to keep his promise. He's going to cross the ocean to be with the girl he loves. Chivasi takes leave of absence from his job and catches a bus heading north. After traveling for several days, he reaches the North African coast and meets the same human trafficker who smuggled Farahani into Europe. Let's listen on.
Hey, hello. You're not from here, are you?
No. It's my first time in this country.
So, what brings you here? Are you a tourist? You know, it's not safe here anymore, with all the riots and political protests.
I know, but my country isn't any better.
Aha. So, I'm guessing you might be looking for a ride?
A ride? I don't get you. What ride?
Are you trying to get to Europe?
Yes. Can you help me?
You're talking to exactly the right person. And you're a very, very lucky man. Today, a cargo ship arrived from Europe, bringing aid for refugees. A friend of mine works on it, and he says there's space for just 5 people on board for the return journey. You're the last one.
How much would I have to pay?
2,000 euros. It's a good price. Think, it's a fantastic opportunity.
2,000 euros? This is more than the return air ticket.
So go by plane if you can. You want this or not? I have a lot of work to do, my friend.
Okay. I have the money. Here.
Hey, no. Not here. You give me the money in a safe place. Come, follow me.
Chivasi follows the human trafficker to a secret location where he's prepared for the coming journey. He pays the transportation fee and is taken out alongside the ship in a little fishing boat before being snuck aboard. There, he and the 4 other migrants are hidden inside empty wooden crates. A few hours later, he hears the ship's horn signaling that it's about to depart. And soon Chivasi is on his way to Europe. Farahani, meanwhile, is already there, but he's getting increasingly frustrated, stuck in the prison-like detention center. That evening, over supper, he feels he just has to do something.
Listen, my fellow brothers and sisters. Thank you. I don't know how many of you can understand me, since we all come from different countries, but it doesn't matter, I have to try. What matters is that we are all here together, facing the same difficulties. We've been here for a whole week now, and nobody has told us anything at all about what's going on or what's going to happen to us. I know we came here illegally, but we are not criminals. So why have they caged us here like animals and abandoned us? We are all human beings. All we want is to live in peace. I say we should all go on a hunger strike. Until our cases are heard and we are given asylum, we will eat no food and drink nothing but water. How many of you are with me?
And with wild cheers and applause in the detention center canteen, we've reached the end of the 11th episode of our radio drama series, The Promised Land, a story of African migration to Europe. We hope you'll join in the discussion about European detention centers for illegal migrants. You can share your views and stories on our Facebook page, facebook.com/dw.lbe. Until next time, goodbye and take care.
And back here on Africa Link, a reminder of our main stories before we leave you. There's been criticism in Zambia of the suspension of the licenses of 3 private broadcasters. South Sudan's government has set conditions for the return home of former vice president and rebel leader Riek Machar. And President Ali Bongo of Gabon is seeking a second term at presidential elections this Saturday. Remember, we welcome your comments on this program. You can send an SMS to country code 49 at 160-957-59510 and email to feedback.africa@dw.com or a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. From me, Mark Caldwell, bye now.